Well, it's clear, isn't it, that we live in a world that is crying out for healing. Over the past few weeks, I've been confronted with that reality, the pain and suffering and death in the world. Earlier in this month, a young man called Nathan Barry, a 16-year-old fellow from Jenali, went to Southern Shire Christian School. He passed away because of various tumours in his heart and brain, meant that they were terminal. On Australia Day, we caught up with friends, good friends of ours, and the wife was grieving the sudden death of a close friend of hers that she works at church with. The lady had contracted meningococcal meningitis, and she started off the week feeling unwell, and by Friday she had died. Of course, suffering and death is around us all the time, and it's just been a bit closer to me over the last few weeks, although not in a very intimate way, but no doubt there for me to observe and note. And all of you have no doubt had your own experiences with suffering, disease, sickness and death, probably far more personal and devastating than I've just described. But what is clear, and we all know it, that we live in a world that is crying out for healing. Whether it be cancer, leukemia, mental illness, dementia, chronic pain, heart disease, and the list goes on. And when we're confronted with the reality of suffering and disease and sickness and death, it inevitably gets us searching for a solution. And so we have all these fundraising initiatives in our community, don't we, to find solutions to these things. We have Pink Ribbon Day for breast cancer. We have Red Ribbon Day for HIV and AIDS. There's Movember for men's health, etc., etc. And when people do make a significant advancement in the field of medicine, we rightly treat them as heroes. So, I might just grab that, so it might be better, sorry. So in 1945, the three men who discovered penicillin were awarded a Nobel Prize for medicine. Victor Chang, lauded for his pioneering work in heart and lung transplants, has a life-size statue of him at the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute. Fred Hollows, renowned for his work of restoring eyesight of Indigenous Australians and many others around the world, was named Australian of the Year in 1990. These were men who brought relief to a world that is crying out for healing, and we rightly laud them as heroes for that. 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ came into the world with power and authority to heal any disease, disability or condition in a way that had never been seen or has never been seen since. And for a world that's crying out for healing, what Jesus can do and has to offer shows that he has the solution the world is crying out for. He has something to offer that no one else can offer. He brings healing and to the brokenness of our world. And this morning we're going to look at this passage and see how Jesus does bring that solution to a world crying out for healing. And as we do, you'll see there in your outline, we'll look at it under three headings. What's Jesus doing? Who's it for? And how can he do it? What's he doing? Who's it for? And how can he do it? Well, we're starting this new series this term, focusing on Matthew chapter 8 through to 10. And you can see there in verse 1, Matthew gives us the context. Jesus has come down from the mountainside. What's the mountain? Well, it's the mountain where he was delivering his famous Sermon on the Mount. You can read that in Matthew chapters 5 through to 7. He's finished. He comes down the mountain. And he's been up on the mountain. He's been teaching about the kingdom of heaven. Now he's teaching what it means for him to be the king of the kingdom of heaven. And here in Matthew 8 through to 10, Jesus is going to show you that he is that king, the king of God's kingdom. And all the miracles that Matthew is going to highlight for us throughout these chapters point us to the fact that Jesus has arrived and he is God's king, the king who has come with all power and authority, and he's come to usher in this kingdom of heaven. Now at the moment, all this is happening up in Galilee, in and around Capernaum. You can see it up there in the northern part of Israel. Jesus come down the mountain. The mountain was probably to the east of Capernaum. He's left that. He's coming towards the city. And in these next few verses, 1 through to 17, he begins to heal many. And so what's Jesus doing? Well, in these few verses, Matthew recounts four specific examples or instances where Jesus heals. There's the leper, the centurion's servant, there's Peter's mother-in-law, and then there's the whole crowd, the many. And why is Jesus doing this? Well, as he heals, he's laying down proof for who he is. He's demonstrating with absolute clarity that he is the King of God's kingdom who's come with all power and authority. And we see this in each of the healings that he performs. So in verses 1 to 4, there's the healing of the leper. Now, leprosy in those days was as feared as cancer is in our time today. Medics tell us that a patient's condition deteriorates. As it deteriorates, the skin becomes scaly and white, and the sufferer takes on the appearance of a dead man, a dying man. And as a result, a leper in those days were considered both medically unclean and spiritually unclean. They were forced to live outside the city or outside the township. They had to be isolated, quarantined. And they had to cry out, unclean, unclean, when anyone came towards them in case they accidentally touched them and became infected as well and became unclean. They weren't able to go and worship in the temple because that would put them in proximity with others, so they were excluded from worship. And in total, they were excluded from the whole community. It was devastating for them. And this leper comes to Jesus and throws himself at his feet and says, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. And with a touch, just like that, the man was healed. And for the Jews looking on and seeing this miracle, they would have been left in no doubt what this meant. Because they knew from the Old Testament that God had healed the Assyrian commander, Naaman, of his leprosy. And here is Jesus touching a man and healing him of his leprosy with just a touch. And they would have been left in no doubt. This is only something God does. And for those watching on, it would have been crystal clear, here is a man who's come with all God's power and authority. Now Jesus moves on into Capernaum, and a centurion comes to Jesus. He has a servant at home suffering with some type of paralysis that's causing him great distress and suffering. And initially Jesus was going to go to his house in Capernaum and heal the man. But the centurion says, no, Jesus, you don't have to worry about that. Don't go out of your way, just say the word and I know he'll be healed. And Jesus says, go, it will be done just as you believe it will. Now, how's that for power and authority? Just a word. Go, it's done. And he does it from afar. He doesn't even need to be in the same vicinity as the man. The centurion, his power extended over a company of soldiers. Jesus is showing here that his power and authority extends over all people in all places without limitation. Matthew goes on to give us more examples of Jesus' power and authority as Jesus goes into Peter's house, and Peter's mother-in-law is lying in bed with a fever. And to have a fever in those days almost always ended in death. And yet Jesus walks in, touches her, and fully restores her to health. Now, it's apparent that these three healings are all just the tip of the iceberg. They're just a few examples of the many healings Jesus did. Because in verse 16, Matthew says that many people came to Jesus that evening and Jesus healed all the sick. He basically put all the local doctors and hospitals out of business in one night and saved Medicare a fortune. With just a touch, just a word, and from afar, Jesus heals all kinds of sickness, disease, and death. And in doing so, he emphatically says, I am the King of God's kingdom, and I have been given all power and authority. But Jesus is doing much more than just pointing to his power and authority to heal. Jesus is also pointing to a time when sickness and death and disease will be no more. You see, he's giving us a glimpse into what it will be like when, as the King of God's kingdom, he ushers in the kingdom of heaven with all its fullness and all its glory. We get a hint of that in verse 11. In response to the centurion's trust in Jesus, Jesus says, many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Now, what's the significance of this? Well, in the Old Testament, the kingdom of heaven was often described as a great and glorious banquet. And so, for example, in Isaiah 25, God says, on this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and finest of wines. On this mountain he'll destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove the disgrace of his people from all the earth. The Lord has spoken. In that day they will say, surely this is our God. We trusted him and he saved us. This is the Lord. We trusted in him. Let us rejoice and be glad in his salvation. It's a wonderful picture of a new creation. It's a picture of a wedding banquet. And you know, when you go to a wedding banquet, you look at the menu and what options do you have? It's like chicken or beef, right? Every time. This wedding banquet you go to, it's either Jamie Oliver or Marco Pierre White, right? It's the best of food. And it's not just a bottle of Wolf Blass Yellow Label. This is, you know, the best wine from the Hunter Valley or the Barossa Valley or the vineyards of France. It is magnificent. And the benefits of being at this banquet is this. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces and he will remove the disgrace of his people from all the earth. You see, the people had been waiting for God's long-promised king who's going to come with all God's power and authority to overthrow sickness and disease and death itself and institute God's glorious banquet in the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus is saying, I've come to do it. And in healing the people that are there in Capernaum that day, he's showing that he is no happier with the way things are in the world than you and I are. And he shows with utter clarity that he has the power and authority to do something about it. And he's saying, these healings I'm doing before you is what you will experience in eternity when I usher in the kingdom of heaven. And so he gives us a foretaste of the things to come when he brings in that kingdom. He hasn't just come to provide a solution to a world that's crying out for healing from sickness and disease. He's come to provide the solution for a world that's crying out for healing from death itself. Now, friends, this is really important. Because the point of this passage is not to say that Jesus is going to heal you and I or the people that we love of all our sicknesses and diseases and infirmities. Yes, Jesus can heal without limitation. But we see from this passage, he didn't heal everyone everywhere. He was healing there in Capernaum. He didn't give us the cure for cancer. He didn't take away all disease and sickness forevermore. And the reason he did that is because he was healing for a purpose. And that purpose was to show who he is and why he has come and what he's come to do. And while he didn't take away all sickness and all disease that day, he showed that there will be a time that will come when he will. He didn't give Nathan Barry and his family the cure for cancer, but he's shown the power and authority to overcome everything, and that the day will come when cancer will be no more. Can Jesus heal you now of your sickness and disease and infirmity? Yes, absolutely. And he's shown he's got the power and authority to do it. Will he heal you now? Maybe. But whether he does or not doesn't change what he's trying to show us here in this passage. Because what he's doing here is clear. He's showing, I'm the king of God's kingdom. And I've come with all power and authority to overcome sickness and death and disease in this world. And I've come to do it by ushering in the kingdom of heaven, when all that will be no more. Now, who gets what Jesus is offering? Who gets to experience all that Jesus offers when he says there'll be no more sickness, disease, and death? Well, we see the pattern of it right here in those that Jesus heals. First of all, we see that all those that Jesus heals are outsiders. Did you notice that? The leper, ostracized and excluded from the community, outside the community, an utter outsider. The centurion servant would have been a Roman, of course. That made him a Gentile, a pagan. Another outsider, as far as the Jews were concerned. Peter's mother-in-law was an outsider by virtue of being a woman, because in those days, women were treated as property and their testimony in court wasn't even valid. They were all outsiders. And yet Jesus heals them all. And for the Jews watching on, this would have been totally confronting. Why would God's king bless and heal outsiders? They're not the ones who are part of God's kingdom, Jesus. And yet Jesus makes it clear that the offer that he's bringing to a world cry out for healing extends to people just like them. And in doing so, Jesus shows that his kingdom is an upside down kingdom. His kingdom is one where he has power and authority, and it doesn't fit with our culture's view of things. See, our culture says if you want to get into anything, you need to be successful, you need to be beautiful, you need to be skilled, you need to be powerful. So if you want to get into a top-tier law firm, you need to be smart. If you want to get into a professional sports team, you need to be awesomely skillful. If you want to get into the cool group, you need to be beautiful or funny or good-looking. But Jesus turns all that on its head. He says, none of that matters. All are welcome into my kingdom. And it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what station of life you're from, doesn't matter what sins you've committed, what failures you've had, what circumstances life has thrown at you, Jesus' offer goes out to all. But secondly, we see it's not just the outsiders who are welcome, it's actually all who are welcome. And it's all who recognize him as God's king who has the power and authority. We see this with the leper. In verse 2, we're told he comes and knelt before Jesus. Now, that the word in the original language for knelt can be is the word that means prostrated or worshipped. So here's the leper at Jesus' feet, worshipping him, prostrate before Jesus, recognizing him as Lord, calling him Lord. And he also recognizes Jesus' authority because he says, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. So he knows Jesus can make him clean. He doesn't come to Jesus and say, oh, Jesus, I've heard rumors. Yeah, I'm not really sure what you're on about. But if you can, be really good if you can help me out. No, he knows Jesus has the authority. He says, if you are willing, make me clean. He comes trusting that Jesus is the one who is the king of God's kingdom with all power and authority. We see this also with the centurion. He has total trust in Jesus, total faith in who he is and what he can do. He knows Jesus' authority extends way beyond his authority as a centurion, as a leader over other soldiers. And he knows Jesus' word can be trusted. And Jesus is blown away by this. He says there in verse 10, I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. He says in verse 13, go and it will be done just as you believed it would. See, this man has great faith. He believes, he trusts in Jesus, and Jesus is astonished. And here he is, a Gentile, one who doesn't have the privilege of Old Testament revelation to help him understand who Jesus is, and yet he understands Jesus' power and authority better than anyone else in all Israel. See, that's who it's for, friends. All who come to Jesus, recognizing him and putting their faith in him. Now this is backed up by what Jesus says in verse 11, where he refers to the banquet. It's a picture of all nations coming to that banquet to join Israel's patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. They're coming from all directions to come to the feast. It's not just the Jews, it's Gentiles as well, like the centurion. And they're coming to join at that feast because they are people of faith. They recognize Jesus is the one who has power and authority. They recognize Jesus is God's king who's come to bring in the kingdom. But then shockingly, Jesus goes on to say in verse 12, but the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside the feast into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jesus here referring to those Jews who thought they had automatic entry into the kingdom of heaven by virtue of their heritage, who thought that they could enter because of their religious ritualism and their obedience, who thought that they could get in and not worry about who Jesus is and ignore Jesus and not submit to him and believe and trust in him. And so you see the pattern, friends. We live in a world crying out for healing. Jesus comes, says, I've got the solution. I'm going to usher in the kingdom of heaven and it's accessible to everyone. But entry into the kingdom is not based on success or status or heritage. It's not based on religious ritual or obedience. Entry into the kingdom is for all who come to Jesus, bow down and worship of him, and trust that he is God's King who can save them. So how does he do it? How can Jesus provide the solution to a world crying out for healing? How can he overcome sickness, disease and death and usher in his kingdom? Well, again, we see the pattern here in this passage. When Jesus heals the leper, what does he do? He touches him. And in touching him, even though he was medically and spiritually unclean. And in touching the leper, Jesus was willing to become a leper himself, to be infected with the leprosy. He was willing to become unclean in order to make the leper clean. He was willing to be rejected outside the community so that the leper would no longer be rejected. He was willing to suffer so that he would no longer have to suffer. And Jesus was willing to die so that the leper could live. And friends, if you and I are going to enter into the kingdom of heaven, we need to be made clean. Our pride, our greed, our lust, our idolatry, our lack of forgiveness, our selfishness, all our sins need to be wiped clean. And that's exactly what Christ did at the cross when he bore the judgment for our sin. And that's exactly the point that Matthew is making in verse 17 at the end of these healings. In verse 17, he quotes from Isaiah 53 in the Old Testament. And Matthew says, this was to fulfill, like these healings, was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and carried our diseases. Now, if you read Isaiah 53, it's painting a picture of one who would come and not just take up our infirmities and carry our diseases. Because Isaiah 53 is painting a picture of the one who will be pierced for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities, whose punishment would bring us peace, and by whose wounds would heal us. And so Matthew is making it clear to us here, friends, that the true healing that Jesus brings will come when Christ goes to the cross to deal with sin. And in going to the cross, Jesus is willing to become not like a leper, but like a sinner like you and I. You see, at the cross, Jesus was willing to become unclean so you and I could be made clean. At the cross, Jesus was willing to be rejected by the Father so that we won't be rejected by the Father. He is willing to suffer judgment so that we won't suffer that judgment. He was willing to die so that we can live. And so, friends, when you or those that you know are suffering with cancer, leukemia, mental illness, dementia, chronic pain, heart disease, whatever it might be, know that there is one who came to provide the solution to a world crying out for healing. He's the King of God's kingdom who's come with all power and authority, and he's shown that when he ushers in the kingdom of heaven, it will be a place where there'll be no more mourning or crying or pain, for in the kingdom of heaven all these things will have passed away. But just as importantly as the physical healing we so desperately desire, it's not as important as the healing that Jesus provides for us at the cross. For it's only because of the cross can we be cleansed and enter into the kingdom. And friends, if you want that hope, if you want that assurance, then know the cleansing that Jesus offers for everyone. No matter how much of an outsider you think you are. Because it doesn't depend on how good or how religious or how successful or powerful or beautiful you are. It's about coming to Jesus, believing that he can make you clean, worshipping him and recognizing him as the King of God's kingdom. And if you have loved ones who are suffering and you want them to have that same hope and assurance, then tell them about Jesus. Tell them about the one who will bring an end to sickness and disease. Tell them about the one who can make them clean. About the one who died so they can live. Nathan Barry wasn't cleansed of his tumours and sickness that he and all his family and friends were so desperately praying for. but he was cleansed of his sin. Because like those that Jesus healed, he trusted Jesus. And because he trusted Jesus, he'll get to experience the reality of what Jesus so powerfully demonstrated. A place where disease, suffering, sickness, and death will be no more.